The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for something like 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time once again to return to the October 2021 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This will be our last visit to this issue before we turn the page next week on the, do you believe it, November issue of the magazine. The theme this month has been the Blue Ridge Parkway, but we're going to start off with our 1970s Decade of Disruption article that we always read at the last reading of the month, and then we'll get back to the Parkway. This particular issue's version of the 1970s Decade of Disruption is The Modern Pioneers. For environmentalists and back-to-the-land homesteaders seeking a new way of life, a magazine published in Hendersonville guides the way. Written, as always, by Philip Gerard. The back-to-the-land movement emerges quietly as individuals, couples, and small groups forsake large cities and suburbs to make new, less complicated lives in the countryside. From Vermont to southern Appalachia, in the upper Midwest and the Pacific Northwest, these neo-natives acquire farmland and forested acres at bargain prices compared to the metro areas they leave behind. Their quest occurs in a confluence of progressive politics, disillusionment with corporate America, newfound environmental awareness, and personal fulfillment. The New York Times documents the phenomenon. The movement is deeply antagonistic to the American economic system, whose adherence it sees as controlled by unbridled corporate power, corrupted with surfeit and crazed by an impulse to consume and throw away more and more, faster and faster. In an era of automation and consumer plenty, says the Times, the movement harks back to the values of a bygone generation. It would have more people rely on their own personal resources and labor, especially for their food and shelter, Roy Reed writes. One of its mottos is make do with less. Less machinery, less technology, less everything that comes from and depends on big business. An unlikely epicenter for the growing movement forms in a remote county in the mountains of North Carolina. And its Bible, created in numbered bi-monthly $1 installments by John and Jane Shuttleworth, is the Mother Earth News. The husband and wife team is later assisted by a small but enthusiastic crew of paid staff and volunteers. John Shuttleworth grew up on a succession of hard scrabble farms in Indiana, and almost from the time he could walk, he helped with all manner of chores, steering a low-geared home-built tractor by age 4. He survived a serious infection of polio inside an iron lung, and the experience imprinted itself on his character. Now, this was a pretty big number for an 11-year-old to handle, he declares in a plowboy interview in the Mother Earth News, especially since I was declared clinically dead at one point when I was in the iron lung. I still have a vague recollection of floating around up near the ceiling someplace and looking down on my body and that machine. I don't know if, as the mystics say, I actually left the physical realm or not, but I figure that from the age of 11 on, everything has been a gift. For her part, Jane really is coming back to familiar land. I always wanted to come back here because when I was in college, I came here in the summers and taught horseback riding at summer camps. I just always liked being in the mountains. She, too, comes from a farming family. They find a 600-acre tract of pristine land in the Piscataforest community of Transylvania County. Old-growth hardwood trees climbing steep ridges, lowlands watered by streams and Sundance Lake, with a rich diversity of animal and plant life. From the beginning, the Shuttleworths are determined not just to make a good life for themselves. They plan to change the world, maybe not all of it, but enough to make a difference. They will gather resourceful, like-minded individuals into a community, the Mother Earth Eco Village, and publish a kind of newsletter to teach thousands of others how to become self-sufficient on the land. They start the Mother Earth News on a shoestring, $1,500. Their office is the kitchen table, and they are committed to a mission. As John puts it, the magazine's most basic philosophy is that what's best for Earth and the preservation of its delicately interwoven web of life is, by definition, what's best for humankind. The Shuttleworths feel a sense of urgency about their work. From the very beginning, for instance, we felt that we were in a race with time, John explains, 5 years in. The planet was being plundered so rapidly, he says, that we couldn't afford to take the easy way out and offer Mother Earth news only to the relatively few concerned people who, at any one time, are ready for her save the Earth by changing the way you live message. For that reason, we always worked hard at finding ways to reach what I call the great sleeping middle class. The Mother Earth mission is neatly summarized in a 1975 editorial announcement that a 1,000-inhabited eco-village has been designed by architecture students at Georgia Tech. What we need are whole towns that can function without any internal combustion engine-powered vehicles at all. Communities that are almost entirely food and energy self-sufficient, mini-cities designed to operate on and only on their incoming solar radiation. Eco-villages laid out so that all waste is immediately recycled into useful products. Hamlets of quiet, serenity, fresh air, and pure water. Many back-to-the-landers are naive suburbanites with a romantic notion of living off the land, unaware of the hard work, ingenuity, and luck that such an enterprise requires. We tried to head that off by publishing articles by people who had actually done things, Jane says. What we were looking for was credibility from someone who had actually gone out and done something, and if it didn't work out, we wanted to know that too. Their contributors are doers, not theorists, and their writing skills are often rudimentary compared to their abilities as farmers, cooks, or engineers. But they are the real McCoy, and the Shuttleworths and their staff take their hard-earned wisdom and shape it into lucid prose that readers can use to emulate the experts. This dedication to practical authenticity sets the Mother Earth News apart from other magazines that publish only professional reporters. It's harder to take a manuscript from someone who's maybe a carpenter and not a great writer and rewrite it and fact-check it, Jane says, and that's what we did. Volume 1, Number 1, debuts in January 1970. It featured articles such as The Little Car That Could, about a steam-powered automobile, and Living High on $6,500 a Year. A subsequent issue offers Grow Apples Without Poisons, a beginning beekeeper's course, How to Plow with Horses, and Free Power from the Wind, and recognizing that many neo-natives will need to supplement their rural livelihood with paid work, articles like Freelance Cartooning and Start a Bicycle Shop. It was about self-sufficiency, Jane says. And though many back-to-the-landers are expressing a political choice and seeking a spiritual connection, we stayed away from religion and politics. Their business plan is simply to be genuine. John, who worked at a Madison Avenue advertising firm, understands exactly what conventional industry practices to follow for success. And he and Jane subvert them. A typical magazine of the time might contain 70% ads and 30% content. The Shuttleworths do the opposite, choosing to have a high cover price, or rather higher cover price. They sell to subscribers and on newsstands, but they request that unsold copies be returned so they can sell them on back order. They sometimes have older issues reprinted if necessary. They print on recycled paper. It was just a lot of hard work, Jane remembers. We were stuck in the office all the time and didn't get to do any of the fun stuff outdoors. Some of what's being done by Eco Village volunteers, farming plots with innovative techniques, harvesting vegetables from a hydroponic garden inside a geodesic dome, and generating power from a water wheel and solar panels. The Shuttleworths become victims of Mother Earth's success. It grew a lot faster and a lot bigger than we ever expected. We kept outgrowing ourselves. It was hard to keep up. But the enterprise brings undeniable satisfaction. Readers tend to be fiercely loyal, and many of them feel a deep connection to the magazine, Jane says. They would write letters to dear mother and tell her whole life story as if they were writing to their own mother. Eventually, the Shuttleworths sell the Mother Earth's news to three of their own staff. By then, the magazine has become a multi-million-dollar national phenomenon, reaching hundreds of thousands of readers with a staying power that has defied the odds. As the Back to the Land movement ebbs and flows, many of the ideas championed in Mother Earth's pages go mainstream. Organic farming, recycling, wind and solar energy production, clean water and air, and responsible stewardship of the natural environment. I think it made a difference, Jane says, decades later, having survived John and still living in Pisgah Forest. In terms of protecting the environment, I wish it had made more of a difference. She does her best to make that difference lasting. In 2017, she deeds nearly half of her land, 267 acres, to Conserving Carolina, with the aim of conserving even more land in the future. The magazine she co-founded continues on, outlasting most others of its kind. But that's misleading, because there's never really was another publication quite like it. And now its old home place in Pisgah Forest will remain forever a slice of paradise saved. Next month in our decade series, Susie Sharp takes charge. And now we're going to go to milepost 296.7, the Julian Price Campground on the Blue Ridge Parkway. Mother's Daughter. Camping along the Blue Ridge Parkway brings together two generations of women to share memories and to learn more about each other than either ever knew. There's a double-page cup spread here. The right hand of it is all a night scene, so you can't see anything. It's a nice background for the words Mother's Daughter, but on the left we see two people holding hands in a tent with a little gaslight or whatever behind them. It says, to create a cozy space for bonding, the writer's mom, Lisa, spreads out rugs on the floor of her spacious tent and hangs glow sticks outside to light the way on dark nights. Something's not quite right. The rain fly hangs limp over the front door of the tent, ready for us to insert the poles to give it some structure. I look down at the table in front of me, where not just two, but three sets of disassembled poles lie in a heap. There's an extra one. Somewhere in the process of setting up the tent, we missed a step. Didn't this happen last time? I ask my mom, holding up the extra poles. Her face falls. Oh, no, she says, picking up the fly to look at the tent underneath. Those are supposed to go through the front of the tent. My mind flashes back to the last time we went camping together. That time we realized our mistake before we staked down the fly, so we just took it off. But now we're so close to being finished. Mom wrestles with the tent poles, trying to get them in place without taking off the fly. But the angles aren't working in our favor. I can tell she's disappointed. "I wanted everything to be perfect," she says. Oh, well, a few inches of lost space inside the tent never hurt anyone. We let go of our perfectionism and tuck the extra poles out of sight. We have more important things to do, like sitting around the campfire, stargazing, and lounging in hammocks by the lake, admiring the beauty of the Blue Ridge Mountains. I was 26 years old the first time my mom and I camped together. It was just 2 years ago at Linville Falls, about 20 miles down the Blue Ridge Parkway, from where we've pitched our tent today at Julian Price Campground. I imagine that most avid campers have childhood memories of setting up tents with their family deep in the woods, roasting marshmallows, telling scary stories, and snuggling together in sleeping bags while trying to guess the source of every mysterious sound outside. We were not one of those families. When I was about 9 years old, my dad pitched a tent in the backyard, and he, my sister, and I crawled into sleeping bags for our first camping experience. Then we got cold. Somewhat defeated, my dad brought us inside where my mom was waiting with hot chocolate. It was years before any of us camped again. So it came as something of a surprise when my parents, who were planning a 3-week road trip to New England 5 years ago, bought a tent and sleeping bags and pads and cots and a cook stove and camping cookware and rugs for inside the tent and a nightstand and battery-powered lamps and fans and who knows what else. I like some of the creature comforts, Mom says with a shrug. That includes bathrooms and showers, of course. When they stopped at a campground off the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia, Mom slept under the stars for the first time in 40 years. She was hooked. My dad, who spent 30 years in the military and had done enough roughing it, would be satisfied with maybe one or two trips a year. But that hasn't stopped my mom from going out once, twice, even three times a month when the weather is nice. She'll invite me or friends from her neighborhood to join her. One neighbor had so much fun that she ended up buying her own equipment. And sometimes when my dad isn't interested and I can't get away from work, she and her friends, or her friends have other plans, she just goes by herself. Some of my neighbors think I'm crazy for camping at my age, Mom says. She's 63. Not that I'm that old, but I'm getting up there. I think people are afraid of what's out in the wild. You hear bear stories or skunk stories, wild animal stories. That doesn't necessarily mean she's not afraid. She has a few eerie stories about strange sounds in the night. But rustling leaves and weird footsteps don't keep her inside. You just need to be well prepared, she says. As we continue setting up camp, Mom is clearly prepared and in charge. She has bins organized by their contents, cooking supplies, towels and rugs, fire-making implements, flashlights and lanterns with backup batteries. She moves around the campsite hauling wood and hammering in stakes, hanging glow sticks on the tent so we can see if we have to get up in the middle of the night. She's got the routine down pat. I carry a few bins and bags from the truck, helping set up the canopy over the picnic table. Then I wander to the edge of our campsite to Price Lake, where the trees are perfectly spaced to hang a hammock. When I return to the tent, there's already a fire crackling in the pit. It's hard to believe that Mom never camped as a child. My mom grew up in the New Jersey suburbs. Her dad, a dental lab technician, commuted an hour each way to New York City every day and got a week's vacation every year, which was spent at the beach on Long Island, a far cry from wooded wilderness. By the time Mom graduated from high school in 1976, the farthest west she'd been was eastern Pennsylvania. Looking for some adventure, she decided to attend Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. I was very introverted, she says, so it was my way of kind of pushing myself to be on my own and see new parts of the world. She camped once after making a 10-mile trek to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I had a great time. I don't know why I didn't tent camp after that, she said. I don't really have a reason for it. Maybe just because the people I hung out with weren't into it. Over the fire pit, smoke lazily drifts up through the branches of the trees, a light breeze rustling their leaves. There's a slight chill in the mountain air as the sun starts to set. I scoot my chair a little closer to the fire, and we eat our dinner of chicken, rice, peppers, and pineapple that we cooked over the flames. I ask Mom why she decided to get into camping in her 50s. I think what got me thinking about it was when you and your sister were in high school, and you'd go camping with all your friends in Pisgah National Forest. I was kind of jealous of that adventure. In 1980, while living in New Jersey, my mom drove the entire length of the Blue Ridge Parkway in a van. I stopped at every overlook, she says. I didn't want to miss one beautiful view, and I was afraid that if I drove past, that might be the most scenic view of all. She couldn't have known that then, almost 20 years later, she would move to those same mountains with her husband and two kids. My childhood home near Brevard, where she and my dad still live, is just a short drive from the parkway. In her younger years, she had stopped and looked out over the same views that I grew up with. I wanted to go somewhere where there were mountains and freshwater lakes and rivers, she said. I always knew that North Carolina was beautiful. I had always thought that I'd inherited my sense of adventure and my love of travel from my dad, whose work has taken him around the globe. My mom, meanwhile, has worked various jobs throughout her life, at an advertising agency, a casino, and a dentist's office, among others, many of which allowed her to spend time at home with my sister and me. Hearing her talk about adventure, I suddenly see those jobs in a new light. She was always willing to try things, learning different skills. She craves the excitement that comes with new experiences, just like I do. How brave she must have been to leave home at 18 and go live on the opposite side of the country when she'd never traveled more than a couple of 100 miles. How strange it is that a woman I've known all my life, I've only known for half of hers. Mom spent 20 years of her adult life caring for my sister and me. Now that we're on our own, she can do more of what she wants to do. She can be the one outside in a tent instead of making hot chocolate and watching from the kitchen window. I feel like I've missed out on a lot in life by not venturing out and doing things like camping, she says. I just feel that life is short and it's getting a whole lot shorter now that I'm in my 60s. It's late now at Julian Price Campground, and we're sitting in our folding chairs gazing into the fire. My mom likes to use little color packets that turn the flames green and blue and purple, and I watch mesmerized as the flames lick the sides of the logs and the embers smolder like molten rock. One time, when I was camping by myself, Mom says, I watched the fire for 4 hours. I could spend hours in a hammock or hours in front of a fire just chilling and checking out my surroundings or reading a book or exploring a new area. I've always known my mom to be friendly and talkative. She can turn any stranger into a friend within minutes. For some people, camping is all about the camaraderie, she says. I love that, but I don't mind being by myself. Growing up kind of introverted, even though I had a lot of friends in the neighborhood, I was kind of quiet, and I didn't mind it. I could always find things to do. What do you think about when you're watching the fire, I ask. At the end of my trip, I think about, where's the next one? I've made a long list of campgrounds that I'd like to check out, she says. It's not the answer I was expecting, but it sounds just like what I would say. I love the outdoors. I love nature, and I want to get out and enjoy it before I'm too old to enjoy it, she says. I like the fresh air. I think I sleep better in the fresh air, but it's got to be a quiet place. I don't always have that kind of luck in the campgrounds. Which brings us, hours later, to 4 a.m. The man in the campsite next to ours is snoring. Long, loud, bear growl snores. I flip over in my cot and see that my mom is wide awake. He's been snoring all night, she says. Mom's a much lighter sleeper than I am, but I'm surprised that I hadn't noticed the snoring before. Maybe all the croaking bullfrogs drowned it out. either way, neither of us has had or slept much. And now I have to go to the bathroom. I'll go with you, Mom says. She tells me that she has to go too, but I have a hunch that she just doesn't want me to get attacked by a bear. We walk the short distance to the bathrooms and get back, and by that point, I'm as wide awake as she is. Let's go down to the lake and look at the stars, I suggest, and my mom follows me through our campsite. The sky, perfectly clear, is filled with twinkling stars, more than I ever see from my home in Greensboro, where light pollution obscures the view. We stand silently, gazing up at the sky and down at the water, which glimmers with an almost perfect recollection, or rather, reflection, of the stars. And I get it! I understand what draws Mum to the outdoors and why she craves being close to nature. Growing up in the mountains, I spent many a night lying in the grass looking up. Seeing the stars over the lake, mountains rising in the distance, I feel a sort of longing, ache in my heart that tells me I'm home. Mom was drawn to this place, the Blue Ridge Mountains, because she could feel it too. The mountains, the stars, the wind in the trees. I glance over and see calm, peace, happiness on her face, and I can tell that she's thinking the same thing that I am. This is perfect. A little sidebar. Our state knows best camping. Ready to rough it? We talked to three outdoor experts to find out how to pick the perfect campsite, what supplies are on their must-have list, and their favorite pieces in the places in the state to pitch a tent. Visit ourstate.com. OS knows best. Well, we have just 1 minute or so left. Let's see what's here up at the beginning of the magazine. A spa in the sky. High above Fontana Lake, a body of water of a different kind is forming. A large oval tub, big enough for two people to fit comfortably. Fills with water and bath salts in a treetop soaking cabana at Lakeview at Fontana, a boutique hotel and spa near Bryson City. The view from the hub of the Great Smoky Mountains and Finger Lake of Montana, a finger of Montana Lake, is unimpeded, allowing guests to experience the sights and the sounds of the outdoor intimately. It's just you and nature, says Teddy McMichael, who co-owns the property. She introduced the soaking cabanas to the 70-year-old hotel 5 years ago. Inspired by open-air beachfront massage cabanas of her husband's native Mexico. That's Lakeview at Fontana in Bryson City, lakeviewatfontana.com. And that, my friends, is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.